Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Now, Neil, I understand with the play, they had to simplify it because you couldn't have elaborate sets and presentations of different diaries and papers to reflect the different characters and their meetups with Dracula and their interactions. I could see where that happened, and that's why it was rather a static presentation for Lugosi Dracula. But over the years, there have been other attempts to create movies of this character. Did any of them come close to the real book?
The best adaptation was produced by the BBC in the UK in the 1970s. And they actually used locations such as Whitby, that Bram Stoker was known, you know, that's where the Dimitri came ashore. And in reality, and when Bram went there, the wreck was still there. So that became the Dimitri. Bram found the name Dracula in Whitby in Wilkinson's Guide to Wallachia. It's embroiled in the story. It's intrinsic to the story. So they used Whitby as one of the locations. Louis Jourdan, he has the look of an aristocratic European. Of course, he's got that wonderful persona. So I think he did very well in that. And I think the performances all around him were quite remarkable. Frank Langella, I think, you know, it's a very 70s view of it, but I quite liked his portrayal of Dracula. When we look at Gary Oldman, I can't fault Gary Oldman as an actor. He is extraordinary. And as a story, the film that is entitled Bram Stoker's Dracula, it's a great film, but Bram Stoker's Dracula, it ain't. It has all of the wonder. It takes it to the next stage, but it's not a faithful account of the book. I feel in some ways it's a shame. It was an opportunity that was lost, that you could tell the original story really well and then maybe have a prequel, which would have made the second film a prequel involving a lot of the stories that were told in the Bram Stoker Dracula film.
Well, the one thing I remember is that his face kept changing, Gary Oldman.
Yes, yes, and that's right. When they meet Dracula for the first time, he's not as Oldman appears. He's not as Christopher Lee appears. He was, in Bram Stoker's book, an old man. I believe there's I think it's a Spanish or Italian film that comes very close to it, which did feature Christopher Lee. And he's seen there with this kind of droopy moustache and white hair, and they encounter an old man in Castle Dracula. And it is quite right that as the story goes on, and Dracula feasts on more and more blood, he becomes more powerful, and of course, he becomes younger and younger.
Yeah, that film would have been Count Dracula, and it was directed by Jess Franco.
Oh, that's the one. That's the one. And I believe that is the one, and thank you for that, Tim. It's the one that Christopher Lee liked most of all. He said that's the nearest to the, and he swore that he would never play Dracula again unless the stories were more authentic to the Bram Stoker story, which is why when they created the Lord of the Rings film, that Lee was so keen to be part of that because of their authenticity to the original books.
Now, the various legends of the vampire, during the day he has to reside in a coffin with his native soil. They can shapeshift into a bat or a wolf. That if he bites somebody and they die, they awaken and become vampires. These legends, were they part of the original book?
They are. Dracula is seen climbing down the side of Castle Dracula, and he is in this bat form. Yes, if you are bitten by Dracula, you too, as Lucy found out, would become reanimated as a vampire, the undead. And all of these stories, these are stories that are drawn from the Nosferatu, but we must not confuse Nosferatu as a word meaning simply a vampire. Nosferatu actually means creatures of the night. So all sorts of creatures of the night, be they werewolves or ghouls or the walking dead or vampires, are all they're all embodied in Dracula. There were numerous books, Sabine Baring Gould's Book of Werewolves, Bram Stoker was meticulous in his notes. His notes still exist. The books he borrowed for reference exist. His library, when it was sold in London after his death, that exists. So we can track down a lot of his influences. But there's two that shouldn't be forgotten. Firstly, Arminius Vanbury, who introduced Bram to the stories of Transylvanian Central European legends, and he gave him the word vampire. It would be pronounced vampire, but it's spelt with a W. W-A-M-P-Y-R or I-R. It's got that lovely continental ring to it. Bram loved it. Oh, we like that. So at one point, the book was going to actually be called Count Wampir, or Vampire, and the Undead. And that's great. And Stoker even refers to our friend Arminius at Budapest University in the book. Bram gave great credit to Arminius Vanbury. But it was only when Bram was on his little sojourn in Whitby that he had a little trip down to one of the local lending libraries, and he was having a little bit of a furgle around, and he found Wilkinson's Guide to Wallachia. Now, he's not done extensive study into Vlad Tepes or anything like that. In fact, there's no mention of the name Vlad Tepes in Bram's notes. What Bram has done has looked at Wilkinson's Guide to Wallachia and Transylvania, and he's discovered a reference. The reference is in the notes for Dracula. It is a reference to a voivode, a type of mercenary soldier. And actually, in the Wilkinson account, he's not a desperately good one. But the name of that voivode was Dracula. And that changed everything for Bram. Bram didn't go into extensive research. Bram never even set foot in Transylvania. Sorry, folks. Sorry, Romanian Tourist Board. You know, all of your castles that supposedly are Dracula castles, in Bram's context, Bram didn't know all of that. He didn't know all of that detail. Dracula is not Vlad Tepes. Dracula is a name from Wilkinson's Guide to Wallachia. And then, from that moment on, Bram changed the title. Like, gone is Count Vampire, and we've got Dracula and the Undead. And in fact, that was the original title of the stage play. It's on the posters. But when it came down to the book, Bram took a gamble. And the gamble was to write a book which hasn't even got a name that you would recognize. It's not, you know, like a single name of a girl, for example. It might imply a romance story or something like that. Or a powerful man. It's not. It's the book. Not Dracula and the Undead. It comes out as Dracula. And in fact, can you imagine how Bram felt? You roll that word around your mouth. It's got an edge to it. If you see just that name on the spine of a... If the book was published, it was yellow, the hardback version. It came in a white slip dust wrapper. But the hardback book is yellow with red writing.
Before we go on with describing Dracula, We have Neil, Gene, Tim, you're in.
The Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Tehebo Tea Club's original pure pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
We depend on our drinking water supply daily, but where does that water come from? Your water provider encourages you to get to know your local water source so together we can protect and preserve it. The investments we make as a community to protect our water source now ensure we have a sustainable drinking water supply for the future. Visit drinktap.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the American Water Works Association and your local water provider.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendovite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendivite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendivite is all natural. Extendivite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendivite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
This is me, the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
Sounds like somebody went to a lot of effort and probably money to put this book together.
Well, Bram spent a lot of years writing Dracula. It was originally for his lord and master, Sir Henry Irving. You know, this was to be a stage play from Bram to the man he idolized. But by 1897, Irving had more or less worked Bram to death. You know, he'd worn the man out. And even Bram's family, Bram called his son Noel. He called him Irving. That was his original first name, but by that time, young Noel just wanted to be known as Noel, because the family had had enough of Irving leeching the father away, that he wanted to know and love. Bram was undoubtedly a man who loved his family, he loved being social, but I think Noel felt very much that he borrowed his father rather than had a full-time dad. It was tricky. It was tricky. So there's a lot of Bram's own life blood in that book. But before we move on from Arminius Vanbury and all of this wonderful creation, we mustn't forget that a woman was also responsible for most of the folklore in Bram's book. And her name was Emily Gerard. And we should pay our respects to her because she was, and I emphasise she, was a Victorian explorer. Now, Transylvania is on the far-flung map of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. In fact, it even hangs over the edge of some of the maps. She travelled that country. It's dangerous. There's bandits in parts of that country. Yes, it's got a railway system, but up in the Carpathian Mountains, and it's dangerous. And she travelled it. She travelled it, got to know the locals, and she accurately recorded a lot of their folklore and superstitions. And it was published in an article in a very good, it's an mostly an academic and literary journal called The 19th Century. And Bram used to write for the 19th Century, and of course he read the 19th Century, and that is where he saw Emily Gerard's Transylvanian Superstitions article. It was an absolute game changer in his creation of the Dracula story.
So what's different about the real Transylvania to the one depicted in Dracula?
The difference is that in the real Transylvania today, they quite rightly talk of Vlad Tepes and Vlad Tepes's castles, and they name them, they find them. Yes, that's fine. But they keep calling them Castle Dracula, knowing that the world is going to think, ah, that's Count Dracula's castle. You know, oh, yes, Count Dracula. Oh, he really put people on spikes. And Vlad the Impaler. And in fact, even some of that is depicted in the Bram Stoker Dracula film. But in the book, it's not there. Dracula is just a name. So all of this, the two have merged. But that said, I'm sure if Bram had the time and money to travel to Transylvania, he would have loved to have soaked it up. But the Transylvania Bram knew was drawn entirely from travel guides, and it is travel from maps and talking to people who had actually been there. So it has that air of authenticity. But at no time did Bram's foot set foot on Transylvanian soil.
Well, I was just going to ask, the style that Dracula was written in, you know, a series of letters and journals, was that a popular style when the book was written? Because I know to a lot of modern readers, it's lacking, so to speak. And I know that it's making movies based off of that novel difficult as well.
Yes, it was different. And it was different because it had been pioneered, really, by Wilkie Collins in The Woman in White. And so Bram loved to write in the voices of various people in his books. So it was very much in Bram's style. It was the cutting edge style of the day. The Wilkie Collins, Woman in White, very, very popular, had been made into a successful stage show, you know. But we have to be honest, Bram Stoker's book, that yellow book, that Dracula, was not a mega success in its day. It sold well. But when Bram died in 1912, remember it's published in 1897, when he died in 1912, the obituaries spoke beautifully of his various books, his fiction books, but it was said that he would be best remembered for his 2-volume biography of Sir Henry Irving. And really, the rest of the stories were left to go to the four winds. But Dracula, the book, just seemed to endure.
Now, and just to point this out to people, a little bit of background information. The book, I guess in its original edition, it says here, had 418 pages, which is a pretty big book, okay? It's a sprawling novel. Yeah. Whereas the movie, based on the play, the one with Bela Lugosi, was 1 hour and 15 minutes. Yeah. So it's like taking 50 pages of the book.
You're absolutely right. And when you see Bram Stoker's original script for the play, oh, it's got crossings out and tearings out and pastings in and all sorts to make it fit. It was really tricky to get it to fit. But fit it did. It was, I think, if we really, it is, in my view, a masterpiece, Dracula. It is a masterpiece of Gothic horror. In the same way that you can mark the 19th century Gothic horror, beginning with Frankenstein, with Mary Shelley, and really it ends and continues and grows and develops, but from 1897 with Dracula. They are the two marks of the 19th century.
So in 1897 we have Dracula, yeah, and we have airships.
Yes, in America. Yes, very true. Very true.
And Dracula was one of the pilots of the airships. No, that's not true. I just made that up.
Well, I'm sure that Bram would have liked that thought.
So you mentioned here, of course, that the book did well but wasn't a super, super bestseller during his lifetime. It wasn't what he was recognized for. When did Dracula begin to become the cultural phenomenon? Was that with the play?
It was Universal Pictures. They picked up on the play. They like Bela Lugosi. And they saw the potential of it. In many ways, as we look back on Dracula, if you read it now, it's got so many great ideas and themes. So if modern sensibilities want to say, well, the book is not an easy read, and if I'm really honest, I think for a lot of people it isn't easy.
We're going to make this easy for you, that we have some announcements coming up. Neil, Tim, and Gene, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Update. In the headlines this Sunday, the first tropical storm since 1939 hitting Southern California right now. Governor Gavin Newsom issuing a state of emergency.
Please listen to emergency personnel, local officials. Take seriously debris flows and floods, flash floods, lightning, possibility of tornadoes. Stay safe.
Word, the 39th president of the United States, Jimmy Carter, is apparently in the final chapter of his life. Correspondent Brad Siegel reports.
Those were the words of former President Jimmy Carter's grandson. on Saturday, the Carter Center announced in February that the 98-year-old former president was being placed in around-the-clock hospice care after a series of short hospital stays. Carter became known for his work with Habitat for Humanity for many years after his presidency. He was still teaching Sunday school until 4 years ago. Apart from grandson Josh Carter's sentiments, there were no details provided about the former president's condition.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
If we've learned anything from recent news, it's that unexpected things are happening. Your gut tells you there's something very wrong going on, and all the evidence suggests that there is. Government emails are hacked. There's talk of how to fight World War III, and trade of grains and food are being disrupted. Those in charge say everything's fine. Stop noticing. But you know better. It's time to invest in self-reliance and emergency food storage now, more than ever. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, is the place you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunch, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save 25%, plus get free shipping on all their 3-month emergency food kits. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, I read Dracula, I don't know, 60 years ago, something like that. And it wasn't necessarily a difficult read. It was a long read because it was a big, sprawling novel.
Yes, absolutely. Sir Christopher Frayling, a wonderful man, preceptor of the Royal College of Arts, he's the man who coined the phrase spaghetti westerns. And he looks upon Dracula, and we have talked about this, the two of us. It's a tale of frontiers. It's a big story. In many ways, you can see it in almost terms of the big sort of Sergio Leone westerns. That it covers a huge splay across Europe. I think of it as a book of many ideas, many themes. It's gripped me. I've read it many times. I've revisited it over the years. And every time there's a new theme that you can see in it. And it's not always necessarily what Bram intended. It just gets your mind thinking about the possibilities, the ifs, the buts, the maybes. What a book.
What would surprise us about Bram Stoker?
Oh, well, number one, that he couldn't walk until he was 7 years old. And he went on to become a tall, muscular, very, very good rugby player, athlete and sportsman. So that's one thing. He metamorphosed into this sort of big, strong, titan of a man with the smile of Machiavelli and the paw of Hercules, you know, wonderful. Never lost his Irish accent. He was a forceful dancer on the ballroom floor. He was described as something as a force of nature if you got in his way in one of the dancing gallops. So don't forget, he's not always a serious man. He was a man of ebullience, of wit. He loved good food, and he had stories that he could tell for any occasion without resorting to vulgarity. But what would surprise you might be his connections. Now, he knew many people. Bram Stoker had a great fascination with Abraham Lincoln and the American Civil War. And, of course, you will know that, tragically, Abraham Lincoln was shot in Ford's Theatre by John Wilkes Booth. Well, John Wilkes Booth's brother was also an actor. And, in fact, he was quite a good one, very well regarded on the American stage. And so Bram kind of engineered Booth and Irving to share the stage in London. And that was quite something. And I'm sure that, part of that is to get closer to the Lincoln story. Bram admired Walt Whitman and his Leaves of Grass story, which also he got to know Walt Whitman. Whitman had a great interest in Lincoln. And when Whitman died, he left his memorabilia, his Lincoln memorabilia and research to Bram Stoker. And in fact, the plaster cast of Abraham Lincoln's face and hands that were made in Abraham's lifetime, they wanted something more permanent, some preservation of these objects. And so Bram Stoker was one of those instrumental in getting them cast into bronze for perpetuity. And Bram even spoke publicly, he lectured on the story of Abraham Lincoln. So that's another side that many people don't realise. But what might intrigue people most of all were some of his closest friends. His closest friend really was Sir Thomas Henry Hall Caine. Now, Hall Caine is, his granny was Manx, and Manx for little boy is Tommy Beg. And so the dedication to Dracula is to my dear friend, Tommy Beg. And people, for many years, didn't realise who that was. They thought, is it some Eastern potentate? Is it an anagram? But all along, it was Bram Stoker's dedication to his best friend. And indeed, Hall Caine dedicated books to Bram Stoker before Dracula. So there's a great friendship. I discovered a huge amount of correspondence between the two on the Isle of Man, where Hall Caine bought Greeba Castle. But amongst that correspondence are also letters to Hall Caine as a young man from a gentleman it is believed he was very close to, dare I say, even having a homosexual relationship with a man called Francis Tumblety. And Francis Tumblety is Britain's special branch number one suspect for Jack the Ripper. And I think that's a very intriguing combination there. Now, in 1888, when the Ripper crimes were taking place, Tumblety was also known to have been in London. Tumblety was also known to have been embroiled in the Lincoln conspiracy, probably not genuinely, but he liked to embroil himself in intrigues and make himself a lot more interesting. He was a very bitter man, but he's very flamboyant as well at times, very strange character. So the question is, it's the $1 million question, did they ever meet? Well, we don't know. There's no proof of it, but Tumblety is certainly the sort of man that would have been invited to the Beefsteak Room to dine after visiting the Lyceum Theatre. He's got a connection to Lincoln. He's a friend of Hall Caine. I think they met. I think they met. And I think Hall Caine, having been so intimately close to Francis Tumblety, he would have some very strong suspicions of his own about him being the notorious killer, Jack the Ripper.
Did they ever solve the Jack the Ripper mystery?
No, they didn't. It's the greatest unsolved series of murders in the history of crime. In many ways, he's the first really prominent and identifiable serial killer. The FBI, in fact, as part of their training, examined the case forensic leader, John Douglas, Robert Ressler, and a team there set that up as a case to investigate. And although there are some prime suspects, Francis Tumblety really does look. When the man kept women's uterus preserved in jars to show people to explain how vile he thought women were. He was in London at all the right times, and my good friend Michael Hawley has done what we've all been trying to do for a lot of years, and he's really worked hard. I always knew it would take an American researcher to nail this, because Tumblety, he was arrested on bail for a lewd act in London, and he fled. And he fled to the USA. And Michael Hawley and other researchers in America have traced Tumblety travelling around the country. In the day before, you didn't have an awful lot of interstate communication. But now you can, and now you can see the newspapers. And wherever Tumblety went, a trail of blood followed him. Because wherever he went, there were murders. You work out where his office was, and he'd set himself up in offices. He was a backstreet abortionist. He sold this pimple banisher stuff. But he was also, he had medical knowledge. And wherever he went, murder, he went hand in hand with it. Most mysterious character, and a highly likely suspect for Jack the Ripper. And it's interesting that Bram Stoker, in his books, love to include allusions to friends, and he has five boxes, five supposed victims of Jack the Ripper. Five boxes have come on Earth, one of which is deposited on Chicksand Street in the East End of London in the heart of Jack the Ripper territory.
We'll talk about more of this in our next segment with Neil and Tim and Jean. Jack the Ripper. You're in
the podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And there's so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, folks, Neil's going to be hanging with us for the After the Paracast Premium Podcast. Check theparacast.plus for more info. In the meantime, we've moved from Dracula to Jack the Ripper, being the Dracula being a fictional character, but Jack the Ripper being a real character, committing murders never solved, also a pop culture kind of phenomenon. How does that happen where somebody who kills people becomes part of our pop culture?
It was, in many ways, a perfect storm that in 1888, were more and more newspapers that were available to more and more people. In Great Britain, we'd had an Education Act in the 1870s that meant more people had gone to school and more people can read. So it meant that these sort of, what they used to call chapbooks, cheaply produced books that would come out with these lurid stories and illustrations. Street literature was very, very popular. Ballads of such crimes. And of course, this was horrible. These were genuinely horrible crimes. In 1888, Britain was at the zenith of its empire death. Queen Victoria is on the throne. This is the greatest empire on earth, in inverted commas. But it's also an empire where there is biting poverty, not just on the streets of the far-flung corners of the empire, but right on our doorstep. And not in some far-flung industrial city or rural area. This is in the heart of London, in the East End, where people are reduced to rags and biting poverty and living in squalor and dirt and disease. This is the underbelly of society. And out of that society, there were many women who, and this is why Jack the Ripper was so terrifying, they were reduced to having to sell their bodies. It could be that they'd maybe taken to drink, maybe there've been issues in their life. They've ended up on the streets. And the only way to avoid being on the street for that night is to earn a few coppers so you can afford a doss house. You know? It could happen to any one of those women. That's why it was terrible. Most of them were not full-time prostitutes. These are just women that occasionally turned to prostitution to earn some money. It was so frightening for all of them. So you've got this climate of fear. You've got this underbelly that the Victorians love to hide away, to brush away, but it's being exposed by the coverage of these murders. And then add on top of that the murders get more and more horrible. People start to worry about the attacks taking place elsewhere in the country. Letters are being sent to the news agencies taunting them, and the Illustrated Police News It's iconic. These pictures capture the scenes of the murder so dramatically. In fact, the reportage was said to be so terrifying, one woman was frightened to death by it. That's in the newspapers. You know, that's High Street newspapers, so frightened that she's read about it, and Jack's going to come and get her. It was a real climate of fear in illustration, in word, and in word of mouth. And out of that came this pop culture figure. And I think it's often down to the name he was given, because originally he's known as the Whitechapel Murderer, the Whitechapel Fiend. Even some reports describe him as the Whitechapel Vampire. And we know for certain that Bram Stoker saw those reports. But it's the letter that's sent to the central news agency that warns about, I'm down on prostitutes, I'm going to cut their ears off just for jolly. It's a horrible letter, it's in red ink, but it's the name at the end of it. It's the everyman character, Jack the Ripper. It embodied it all, it encaptured the fear. And it was an everyman character, because it could be anybody. You know, you've heard the phrase, everyman Jack of them. You'd have Jolly Jack Tars, you had Springheel Jack, the terror of London. Jack was the everyman. Jack the Ripper could be anybody and anywhere. That was how he became a dark icon of 19th century Britain, a true bogeyman.
Right, but I gather from what you're telling us here, after all these decades, we will never, ever truly solve that mystery.
I think you're absolutely right, Gene. It ain't going to happen in a court of law. But, I mean, Jack's gone. You know, he's gone. What objects were associated with those crimes, truly associated, although some may claim to have a shawl or this or that or the other, they've all gone. They've all gone. I think the shawl's been pretty much debunked. What DNA conclusive proof could we have? I just don't think we could ever find that. But here's an interesting point. If you put together all of the evidence against Francis Tumblety, all the evidence that we've assembled now, and you took him to a court of law in 1888 with all of that evidence, I think he would have been sentenced, found guilty, for being Jack the Ripper.
The thing about Jack the Ripper is that at the time, there were mass murderers, but they didn't get the attention that old Jack did. Why do you think that is? I mean, was it because in those days, the yellow journalists, the popular papers at the time, were really reaching their heyday, and they just ran with it and captured the public's attention with that one story?
I don't think we'd ever seen in Great Britain, in the popular conscience or police knowledge, a murderer quite like this. You can find one-offs that really are quite vicious and horrible, but for a series of murders that keep getting worse and worse, this is the first one to really hit the headlines. And I think that's well evinced by the fact that the murder scene of Mary Kelly is one of the first murder scenes ever to be photographed in British police history.
So it was the right place at the wrong time.
I think it was the perfect storm. We'd never knowingly seen anything quite like it as a serial murderer in Great Britain. Certainly not within the popular conscience. Who knows what sort of monsters existed before, when they could cross over county areas, when there was next to no policing. There would have been horrors, no doubt. But in the modern world, we had never seen anything, at least in Britain, like Jack the Ripper.
Neil Roberts' story. Tell our listeners, if they want to know more about the things you do, where do they check you out?
Have a look on the website of Pen and Sword Books UK. We've got some American offices as well. There'll be an American release of my new book, Bram Stoker, The Man Who Wrote Dracula, an illustrated biography, due for publication next month.
When is your UFO book coming out?
UFOs Over the UK is due for publication next year.
You can find us as the Paracast on Twitter, or X, excuse me, on X. It sounds like a file. On Threads, on Facebook. I'm losing track of all these places. We also offer branded merchandise for Paracast listeners at theparacast.shop. That's theparacast.shop. You have four different logos to choose from. And then t-shirts and other gear and wear and all sorts of merch you want to check out. We also offer a streaming service, the Paracast Plus. Check the Paracast.plus for more information. With the Paracast Plus, we give you this show free of the network ads with better quality audio. We also give you the After the Paracast podcast with extended uncensored discussions, and Neil will be back for that one. For more information, check out the Paracast.plus. Use the coupon code UFO20, UFO20, and get yourself a 20% discount on 5-year and lifetime subscriptions for the Paracast Plus at theparacast.plus. Neil Robert Story, glad to meet you. Thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Thank you, Gene. It's been a pleasure.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.